Hello, hello. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming back for the, I want to say 53rd or 54th, but the 2018 post-Halloween podcast. I'm still in a bit of a weird place, physically speaking, so I can't promise the audio quality will be great. I apologize in advance if there are any issues with that, but have a bunch of questions. Presumably including a lot of Halloween ones, maybe some Patreon ones as well, because we started up on Patreon since the last podcast. And yeah, I'm just gonna dive in, and if there's anything that didn't get asked, I'll talk about it then. I guess the yeah, we'll dive in. CryptoDynamic has our first batch of questions. Hey, Kinnack. Hi, Crypto. Happy post-Halloween. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving as well. Yeah, Thanksgiving, it has been extremely laid back. We were planning on sorry, whiny kitten. Okay. I apologize if there are extremely loud kitten noises. She's trying to get onto my lap with the recording laptop here. So hopefully she doesn't give you all too many prompts. Yeah, we were planning on heading down to, I think it was North Carolina, to hang out with my family some, but that sort of fell through, which is unfortunate. I don't get to see my family very often. We've sort of scattered. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I have my mom's down in Florida, one sister is out in North Carolina, the other sister's back in Wisconsin, and I'm in Ohio now, so it's not an easy feat to get us all in one place, which is basically what fell through. But with that falling through, it meant that we had a very laid back Thanksgiving, just hung out with some friends, had some turkey and gravy and mashed potatoes and stuffing, some really interesting sweet potatoes that I think we're going to make again. We ended up having to the dangers of cooking for Thanksgiving. Sometimes you need to keep things warm for way too long. Or risk reheating them, and we ended up rolling wrong on that, but I think fresh out of the oven, so it's been amazing. Any general thoughts on how Halloween turned out this year? It definitely was interesting. We there. There's always, I mean, something that people do that's some sort of unexpected, but there was a lot of stuff during the setup that was predicated on at least some number of people sort of taking the easy way through certain choice encounters, and everyone was like 100% on hard mode, which was kind of interesting. Because there was some stuff that unlock that would have actually been very, very simple to unlock, and I was assuming somebody would crank through it and unlock, that either didn't unlock at all or took like way longer than I was expecting it to, because everyone was really focused on the more difficult aspects of that encounter, which I thought was pretty interesting. Did the Blood Pirates require more work on the maze encounters, or is there something else going on there? Emily's mentioned the plans being worked on let us know we weren't ready right away, but left it unclear what the trigger might have been. Yeah, it just did not get to. This relates very closely to what I was just talking about. There were, basically, just there needed to be enough. The fountains were related in with the space being cleared and the foam walls going in, and the space being cleared, just like nobody did that. And I'm not sure how much of that was, you know, explaining things clearly, which is obviously always a question with these. And because, I mean, I don't explain things clearly kind of on purpose, right? Like, it's sort of a question of, oh, what exactly does this do on, like, a cosmic level? Which I think is part of the charm, probably. Although I definitely played a little bit with that this year with certain other things, hopefully being clearer. But, yeah. Yeah, there's just some more work that needed to be done there to get those unlocked. You might end up running into them in a future year because there's no coding for them. It would be easy for me to add them again later. But such is the way of things. With the titles like Stone Wings and Bat Whisperer coming unavailable and completely dropping away after year, is there any chance you might let us know what the requirements were after the fact? There's a chance some of them might get reused in the future Halloween. The way that those titles work is kind of interesting. So there's still some questions on my side about how exactly I want those annual titles to function. Because code-wise, what actually ends up happening is whenever someone in a new year gets exactly the same title, it wipes out those titles from the old year, basically. So, like with Metroplex Day, it didn't end up with a lot of the titles rotating because nobody got the titles for 2018, because there's a bunch of new content and people didn't complete all of it to the extent that you need to get the titles. So I ended up having to, well, I ended up deciding to clear some things out manually, because I was, making some really sort of small changes, to some of the titles, just so that they were better in line with the theming, this year. And so I manually wiped out the previous years and was just a little too aggressive on that. And I think I've actually already restored Stone Wings. But assuming I leave things to work automatically, they would only actually go away if I granted Stone Wings to someone later. And by granted, I mean like, you know, granted in the code and let the automatic stuff happen, not like if somebody requested that as one of their donation titles or something like that. Which I generally wouldn't do, you know, just because that's just weird and confusing. So I'm not 100% sure on what we're going to do with those going forward. For the moment, I would just assume that those disappearing around Halloween was just some over-aggressive coding, over-aggressive development, I guess. But the reason that I'm sort of giving a caveat there is I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to end up wanting to do with, like, similar titles. Which might end up coming up again. How do you feel about how Patreon is working out so far? I've been very happy with it. We've got a couple of things that have been requested, with cooking and theoric guns, Both of those are pretty close to being done. I need to go through and make sure that there's the food items are in, not all of like the ability to eat the foods are in for cooking. So I need to fill that in so you know you can actually eat the food. I've heard good things about you know actually being able to eat food. And then the etheric guns are a little bit further out, obviously, because I started the cooking last month. But I've got an outline for that, and hopefully I'll be able to get those done, quote, this month, by which I mean before December rolling around. If not, the etheric guns should be a pretty quick one. I'll get barring some relapse into illness, I shouldn't have any problems getting the cooking stuff out. But yeah, as far as money's been going very well, I hope people are happy with the avatars that have been coming out. I would like to be getting everyone more donation items, but October is always kind of tricky with that, and November is kind of my post-Halloween coma, but thankfully I got a couple of days back with my Thanksgiving plans being canceled, so that's sort of what let me know. I was, while we were getting up on Thanksgiving, you know, everybody's getting all of the food ready, I'm sitting there coding and cooking, which I thought was kind of adorable. What do you think about some idea for attackers in game warfare to send energy, gain profits, item on debuff in game warfare clones, applying increasing penalties to power defense score, for example, would be less efficient than simply taking defenders on straight if you can? Would it help narrow the gap against extremely entrenched defenders? Sort of offensive versions of fortifications, I suppose. Yeah, there's definitely going to, exactly how it's going to work is going to be an interesting question. Debuffs would require, well, I guess it depends on exactly how it triggers. If it works exactly like fortifications, like triggers at the beginning of the fight sort of thing, if it's just, you know, two halves of the whole, so to speak, then should be fine. It's there are some just difficulties code-wise with giving lingering debuffs where you have to sort of just because of how data is stored. But yeah, offensive there's definitely some. I would like to go in and do some gang warfare stuff. And that's, I think, one of the things is that there, I feel like, the rewards could use some shaking up. Not in the sense that we need to remove a bunch of stuff, but like adding either some more things about gold coins or some additional rewards to one or more of the locations would be good. And we do have a couple of new places that could work, although one of them is the place where gang warfare would take place downtown isn't really exists on the map, but isn't filled in as a location yet, really, that encounters there yet. But yeah, there's could expand that a little bit, and obviously there can always be new systemic elements like sort of guerrilla warfare, as it were. And he hints on snow snakes. I'd really like to actually see them one of these years. Let's see. I'm not sure what I've said on those before, so this might be a repeated hint, in which case I apologize. It's just counting something from a direction. It's a little bit different than the way the rest of the snow folk, as it were, count things. So it ends up with there are certain sort of like optimal strategies as a community to handle the snowmen, and there are some rewards a little bit off the beaten path from that, and I think that's why they haven't been encountered yet. Looking for some computer options, I saw a reference to Midgard Y7 and the refitted Y4 description. Think we'll be seeing any of those? Almost assuredly. I mean, that seems like the sort of thing you very easily might run into, say, in Midgard HQ. Or if you just start, you know, murdering bunches of people downtown, that sort of thing. Actually, probably could have included something like that for the Midgard middle manager guy we've run into at the cathedral, but he's not that. He is... speaking from a purely corporate perspective, there's this interesting gap you get. There's, like, the people who are computer savvy tend to end up with pretty good hardware, largely often because it's kind of like kitbashed to some extent. Like, you'll sort of have, sort of like the refitted Y4 itself. You'll sort of have the, like, IT folks have systems that work based on, you know, glue and baling wire, and then like the upper management folks will also have systems that generally work, but through just throwing giant stacks of money at the problem, and in a lot of, I guess that was always my experience on the corporate side, and then like the smaller business sort of side, by which I mean hundreds or thousands of employees, you'll end up more with like the IT people get nice computers because they need them for various reasons, like whether they're compiling codes or if you have graphic designer people, that less of a big deal than it used to be, but I guess now it's more of a big deal for the people that need like pretty serious rigs to keep things moving. And then you'll still have the upper management, a lot of the time, not universally, but a lot of the time, with equally nice computers because they sort of assumed that they will have as nice computers as everybody else, but they'll have like this, you know, smoking hot, you know, rig and it would be, you know, used to check their email and stuff. But it'll check their email really fast, and that's, I mean, not unimportant if you have someone whose time is considered extremely valuable. But yeah, so I would not be surprised to see something like the Y7 show up not too long in the downtown. Gold S. Did anyone get the sweet canes the vampires were wielding this year? It should have been possible to get the sweet canes. Actually, there were a couple of different canes we should have been able to get. But on the next question, on a possibly related note, the vampires intended to drop bloody sludge, not something else. It is possible, dare I say likely, that something got replaced with that, because they were not intended to drop bloody sludge. So it's possible that, like, the most common cane got replaced with bloody sludge, and it just ended up being sort of, you know, oh, bloody sludge, vampires, what have you. but there were a couple of other canes loading around out there as well. Is it possible to learn that cane strike technique that some enemies use, or are we just too poor? Barring some sort of buggish thing, like we were just talking about, you should be able to learn it. It's not a particularly easy technique to learn, but it should show up there. Well, we find out what the wolf echoes do later. There's a couple of places that this sort of thing will happen in Halloween where there'll be an item that, like, does stuff that is relevant for that Halloween that, because we didn't get there, I might end up doing a callback to. But I might also end up not. It may just end up being, you know, either is a collector's item, or it'll show up later. And generally speaking, if it shows up later, it'll be also available again later, unless it's something where it's like just a duplicate or more effective way to do something else. So it might be like, you know, you can either have wolf echoes or use like a bound twisted hound to do something or something like that. All this talk about cooking just got me thinking, where does the non-fish meat in Metroplex come from? Are there traditional farms somewhere, or is the meat mostly synthetic? Yes. There are traditional farms. There's a little bit of discussion about this, but it's very much background stuff. Not sure where it goes into this, but as like a general sort of recent history lesson sort of thing, a lot of the people in places like Southside, and who were living in places like the Slags before it became the Slags, are in Metroplex because there's been a extremely widespread sort of economic collapse outside of the cities. Like, most of the rural areas are in extremely bad shape because companies like Midgard and Omnitech, not so much Saibatsu, they're not really involved in this, have basically gotten things to the point with drone technology that it's just way cheaper to have, like, one drone operator, technician, or maybe like a small team if you're talking about a large enough area, and then just have a tremendous fleet of drones that take care of miles and miles and miles of farmland. So sort of instead of just like factory farming, very much like an automated farming. And so to a large extent, what meat is in Metroplex does come in from the outside. What actually does come in from the outside, but it tends to be pretty expensive, just because, I mean, having a bunch of drones, like, maintaining a bunch of soybean fields is way, way easier and requires a lot, sort of less expensive drones and less expensive AI for the drones and a lot less of the sort of maintenance fees that would be associated with drones of that caliber. Which isn't to say that it's impossible by any means. I mean, you could the Midgard, you may very easily never run into these in the game, but Midgard does have product lines for, like, if you want to have drones that herd animals for you, and get them into the pens and so forth. And then, like, the pens are also sort of automated. There absolutely are product lines for that, but that's getting towards the point where particularly when you're talking about places like Southside, it's really just not worth it monetarily, because it's sort of become a more of a luxury item, because it's so much more expensive than crops. And from a modern sort of American perspective, that has a lot more to do with the crops becoming cheaper at a much faster rate than animal products. So, if you were to look at like a sort of inflation over time type thing, there's a lot of like currency changes and stuff that make it all jagged and like wars and all of these happy things. But, over an extremely long term, like, animal products have gotten noticeably cheaper, but like the prices for crops have really crashed, even compared to what we're spending, just not very much in the grand scheme of things. Because the mass production has become so incredibly efficient. Which means that the people who have sort of had to move into the urban areas to try and find any sort of work whatsoever end up in places like Southside don't have the resources to get actual meat. So most of the stuff in places like McHale's is actually like vegetarian largely, or if not vegetarian, then sort of is so close it's kind of hard to say. Like, you might end up with, you know, a bit of trimmings added in with like textured vegetable protein for flavor, basically just to give it that little extra, like, oh yeah, this does actually kind of taste like animal. But the but it's sort of like we were talking about how, you know, it's gotten so much, quite a bit more efficient to do animal stuff and a lot more efficient to do crop stuff, but sort of the ability for most people, particularly in the sort of lower classes, a la Southside, lower income bracket, as it were, to make money is like the steepest of those three lines. So it's gone from sort of like, right now it's, in a lot of cases actually, cheaper in weird ways to do meat rather than veggies, depending on exactly what sort of preparations and stuff that you're getting into, like, if you're talking about. I mean, even a lot of times you're talking about cans of green beans, like Metroplex, or any other preserved foods like that, frozen peas and things. Like, a lot of times it's really comparable, especially on like a calorie for calorie basis, which is to say, like, if you're eating to stay alive, as opposed to like trying to even keep a balanced nutrition, which is great, but like not where everybody is all of the time, speaking from personal experience, you end up with there actually being, at least again in the US, you end up with there being a surprising amount of meat in that diet, especially if you end up with like situations where you have people who aren't able to cook for various reasons or get fresh food. A lot of the cheapest prepared foods, actually, foods a lot of meat. But anyway, so you've gone from sort of like some meat, hopefully some veggies, and like even the bottom couple of quintile can sort of afford it to, you know, all three of those lines, you know, the two prices and the wages are all declining, but one of them is declining incredibly steeply, being the sort of the average wages of folks in those bottom quintiles is just like slams into the floor, and that means that not a lot of good food options. But with the improvements with drone-based farming, crops have also gotten so much cheaper that basically that they have enough food not to start burning shit down, typically. And that's sort of where where that line is sitting in places like Southside. They get getting just enough that they're occasionally stabbing each other for like additional food or resources, but not so much that, but not so little rather, that the that there aren't food or resources to get from the other people in their class, and they need to start, you know, punching up, as it were. Anyway, long-winded socioeconomic discussion aside, I've actually thought a lot about farming in this situation. Benefits of growing up in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin, I guess. It's sort of like, what does farming look like in a somewhat dystopian sort of future? And like, how does that kind of affect the people out here? So, one of the reasons that, I guess one of the interesting effects of that is, aside from a handful of small, I mean, you've got, you know, the people who are running these drone farms, so you have some, like, small enclaves from that. You have a couple of sort of ghost towns that might be hanging on to various degrees. And, like, occasional weird stuff like tourist locations and the like, truck stops. Although a lot of that is obviously drone-based. But there's just huge tracts of land in places like the U.S. and which had a lot of sort of rural areas that have by this time sort of dropped from rural to not exactly vacant, because in the areas that I'm talking about, like, there's still like farming and stuff taking place there, like there's still human activity. It's just very much through drone intermediaries, which has some interesting sort of, lots of interesting demographic stuff going on there. Okay, whew. Hopefully that answered all of your questions and more. A few questions from Big Al. Happy Halloween. Thanks for a party event. You are super welcome. Hope you had a good time. Old Town questions. Will you be adding more mysteries to explore in the Old Town Vault? It is very likely that I will at some point. Yes, there's some more content I would like to get in there, but it's one of those things where it's like things have been going slowly enough with downtown that I sort of am preferring to keep my eye on the target, so to speak. Although, I guess. Adding that to the list of things to vote on for first number for pitch guns. Is there a possibility of entering the Old Town offices proper by the back door through tunneling to the vault? There's no reason that shouldn't work. Going from the vault to the offices, generally speaking, not like a super useful sort of thing for quest progression. It should be available. I'll just need to play around with some sort of quest flags there to see. See how we want to do that, in the sense that I'd rather not have that sort of encounter come up a ton, where it's like, oh, do you want to go sort of backwards in this quest? In sort of the same sense as the like the stairs in the Slag's Quest, it doesn't generally throw a bunch of encounters at you with the stairs going back where you came, right, when you're trying to go up. If you've stayed on a floor for a while, you'll get, both sets of stairs. But I'll just need to figure out exactly what the best way to handle that is, so no promises on that happening soon, but it should be doable. We figured out how to infect the big dig with code to turn it into a giant mold. We can feed it centipedes, but even when it seems happy with the tone of mining, it seems unwilling to do our bidding. Any hints on commanding it? Figured out how to do more or less everything that it is actually willing to do. I'll have to dig into that a bit. It's likely that there's sort of an end of the line for the mole, although it wouldn't be totally unreasonable for it to have its whole, like, to be able to trap it and the like after at least it's done digging. You could probably do it before and just kind of cut off that route into the vault, which is fine. There certainly are plenty of ways in. Understanding the specifics of hacking the drive control on Big Rig has been difficult. I imagine it uses a similar mechanic to downloading the files from the vault records, except it doesn't show the percentage and we can only test once per reset. Can you confirm that we are on the right track? Let me take a look, see real quick. It's been a while since I've been in this code, but I know exactly where it is, so. As a side note, I've had an adorable fluffy kitten in my lap since I was like, I hope that Zoe doesn't bother you too much. She's been very good and just wants loves. Both of our kittens had to go to the vet yesterday, and last time we had to. Last time we took them to the vet, our vet was like, yeah, getting blood drawn from her is not a good time, and actually gave us a prescription for gabapentin for her. Basically was like, okay, so like give her one of these before you bring her in next time so we can actually draw blood without getting wrecked by this like 5.5 pound death cat. And so that, you know, she doesn't get stressed out and hurt herself and all those sorts of things. This time was the first time we were able to test it out, and she was just so incredibly, I mean, high slash drunk slash however you want to say it. And just like didn't care about the vet, which was great. Did whine a little bit while they were actually drawing blood, which I mean, I'm pretty whiny during that too, so no complaints there. But the rest of the day was like can't walk straight, sort of like tripping over her own feet and like just curling up and sleeping like crazy deeply. But thankfully she seems to have figured it out, gotten it out of her system. She's doing just sort of back to normal today. Yeah, it's a little tricky to suss out the exact numbers. There's definitely a. There are a few different messages. The messages are themselves not exactly equivalent to numbers, but there are sort of two that. Two that are relevant to like getting, you know, progress. And one of them will always be better than the other, and like substantially so. But it will take quite a bit of testing to see exactly how much, because there's a lot going on in there. Like, A is always better than B. But exactly how much it is varies on a few different factors. But if you sort of know what you're doing and get a little lucky, you could really churn through that pretty quickly. Like maybe even just in one encounter. depending on obviously software loadout and all of these things. But yeah, I would say that roughly you're on the right track, but fair warning that the sort of bonus mode, so to speak, exactly how much bonus you get is pretty complicated. Are there more areas we can infect with Viants other than the records office? I would like to expand that. It's sort of a question of appropriate habitats, though. And as weird as that might sound, and you haven't run into any others yet. But I would like to have that carry forward as you do run into more of those. Judging by ID numbers, we found less than half the available avatars out there. Are all 49 currently available? Is it hard to get? Is there a trick to find a bunch more if we understood it? Any general tips? Well, so a fair number of those, I guess the setting aside the new Patreon ones, which should be, I mean, pretty obvious, like somebody hopefully who has gotten those will well, I mean, Al will be getting those, but hopefully someone who has gotten those will put those up on the wiki so that's obvious, like what they are, what they're for, and so forth. I would think, so yeah, like 48 and 49 are patron avatars. Let's see, 47 isn't available yet, but I think the rest of them are. I believe the rest of them are. It's possible that there's one in here that I didn't push out for whatever reason, but I'm pretty sure the rest of them are. And I would say it's about 50-50. Well, okay, so there are, yeah, it's about 50-50 with the rest, setting aside the Patreon ones. Which ones are PvP based, so stuff you do in gang warfare. And some of that stuff, that varies from, I mean, using a certain type of weapons to, using, you know, certain techniques, doing sorts of different things, having, and there to all the way up to, there are some that are like, do, you know, have this incredibly specific, like, hard to get, outfits or combinations of skills and outfits or whatever, some of which are super non-obvious, right, to go into PvP. And generally speaking, for those, they will be offense based, right? So typically you'd be getting those as an attacker rather than a defender. Just in large part because the code is way easier, but also because, like, I don't necessarily need you to be super successful at gang warfare, which sort of has all of its own rewards. It's just sort of a, you know, how, what sort of things are you doing in gang warfare? So, as long as, you know, you're being active. It's also way easier to code that way. So, little bit on both sides. The other, and I would expect about half there too, are the other half are tied into specific donation items. So there might be, and generally speaking, those will be like 10, 15 sort of coin items. 10, 15. Sorry, 2 to 3 coin items, $10 to $15 items. And so yeah, there's a fair chunk on each side. I feel like the gang warfare ones are have more of a like, okay, go into gang warfare with this set of things you need, right? And those will, and that's, it covers most of those. The ones for the donation items tend to be more like, once you fully mastered the item, and that will, generally speaking, mean, like you've gotten generally sort of all of the pieces, together, you know, if it has like 10 techniques under it and like, you know, a couple of, you know, different forms or like drops items or whatever, like you've sort of gotten all of the, like, I don't want to say in-game content, but all the, like, mechanical content, and you've sort of figured out how it interrelates, there will generally be a way to put that together, that results in an outcome. That said, not every one of them has an avatar, if you get to sort of that same sort of end point and there's like a skill for you there instead, that's generally a pretty good sign. Or with, I mean, a lot of the smaller items, you'll just get like a chain of techniques or a chain of like item drops or something. Generally speaking, and this is not the the best tip until we get items moving again, but the hints will stay in the sort of like newspaper / news alert / TV system until you have completed the item. And if the item has an avatar, it includes that. So, like, if you've gotten, like, a skill or a really hard-to-get technique or something, and the hint for that item, the like, hey, this item is available, maybe poke into it, stop showing up, then, like, okay, that's sort of like the last step. But obviously, they don't show up when they're out of season, so it's not necessarily the most useful thing in the world. But yeah, that's sort of the general ones for the donation items are much harder. But it's the sort of thing that, like, if they're, were an item that had, like, say, this is a complete example off the top of my head, so it's very likely that there's not actually this item. But if there were a item that had like a, let's say, based on the different types of enemies you killed, you got different techniques, and those techniques interrelated in a certain way. Like, you know, you would get a, you would have like a chain of them, and depending on which, you know, direction you're going and like which things come before in the rounds, you get different effects. There might be like a specific chain that has like, you know, maybe most of the chains, it's like, okay, so like these three together do this cool thing, these two together, these four together, but there's one that's like, oh, okay, like you could just, you keep extending the chain, keeps working, and like you get the whole five, and then at the end of that fight you get the avatar. Or it could just as easily be like, same sort of idea. You get, you know, all of the techniques and you, go in to fight, like the, like if it's, we're like the Ragman's Cloak where there's like a sort of boss enemy that's tied to it. I'm pretty sure the Ragman's Cloak doesn't have an avatar associated with it, but as, you know, still an example. It's like, so you go into a fight with that boss, and your deck is, you know, includes one of every technique that it grants, and only techniques that it grants, and you win, you get the avatar. You know, there's a lot of like, so yeah, there, it's, but yeah, generally speaking, looking more closely over the list, I do think that there are, one or two that may not be available, but the vast majority of them are. Even the one that I'm looking at, I'm like, I'm not sure if this is available. It very easily might be. Let's see if anybody's got it. Looking at 31, by the way. Okay, so nobody has it. It's possible that that one's not coded in, just because the theme. It might have been part of an update that I sort of started doing and didn't finish. But it could also have been coded in there and just sorry, this is, it's going to bother me if I don't look, and if I look, I will be able to give you more information, so. Okay. okay, yeah, that's, yeah, you totally can get that. Man, that is not an easy one. Yeah, that one is available. For what it's worth, that one is a, one of the PvP avatars that requires not just like wearing a specific sort of outfit, but actually like doing something within the PvP as an attack. So that will probably come up at some point. And for some of them, and I think that you figured this out to some degree already, it can be sort of an ongoing process, like the pusher avatar. It's not like you, hopefully that's one that somebody has, but it's not for like, okay, great, that's not for, you know, doing something once, it's for doing something a number of times. Some of these are pretty great. Man. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the avatars, by and large, are not intended to be easy. They're actually kind of one of those places where I can really not feel bad cutting loose and making like, it's like, this isn't going to be like I don't feel particularly bad with items or, you know, techniques. But like, I guess like skills. I guess I just never feel bad. I feel extra not bad making avatars hard though, just because like there's a lot of there's just a lot of question of it's not like it's gonna, you know, throw off balance or anything to have people not be able to get avatars, and they're really kind of the thing that I can make is absolutely ridiculously hard to get as I want. So some of these are pretty ridiculous. Like I would be honestly surprised if anyone ever got 24 or 43. But a lot of the others, I think people will pick up eventually. And some of them might just end up being a question of when those items are taken back in. New people will take a shot at them. They might figure stuff out. And so a lot of the others are just like, oh, you know, someone taking on a really specific like theme with how they're PvPing, and that nobody else has done before or gone particularly hard on. And it's sort of like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, this is totally just an avatar that's been hiding here since like the dawn of time. So yeah, hopefully some of that was somewhat useful. There is at least one in here that's a little more related to PvP rewards than the actual fighting in PvP. Although I think you feel like, I guess it's, you might have to go into the fight with PvP, but it definitely involves items that I don't think anybody's discovered yet. Yeah. There's some good avatars. Okay. I'm a little sad about 24, the one that I was like, I'm not sure if anybody's ever going to find it. Because the art for it is sweet. Okay. Fae Dancer in the Cellar Door Club uses Fae Leap, but not the etheric version. Can we feed her Eclipse? Might need to. There are a lot of, she was doing the wings version, right? Moves with an unexpected flap of wings. I think that's actually the main thing that was going on there. Maybe she should. Yeah. Yeah, at present, I don't think there's any way to feed her Eclipse. I was like, why did I do that? Yeah, and it's got the whole things thing. Do you feel like you painted yourself in any corners with any mechanics? That's a good question. Not particularly. I was feeling a little down, I guess, about that old hacking system, but I've sort of replaced that. But, you know, other than that, like I tend to be very like restrictions breed creativity sort of thing. So unless I design something that's just like not very good, then I'm typically pretty happy with any restrictions it ends up giving me. Which is to say, there's probably a bunch of places where I have painted myself into corners, but like, that's sort of where I live. It's like, oh, this is a nice corner. Like, oh, and I don't have to like figure out what's in the rest of the room. Yeah, I'll just build here in the corner. Wiki's been throwing a lot of search errors lately. Do we need to be worried about the future of Wikidata? Is there a backup of the wiki data anywhere? I actually had noticed that as well. I need to shake them and see what falls out as far as like sending them a request, because like I do actually give them some money so we can have it, you know, ad free and the like. I would like to have that work. It's also possible that they've done some sort of like they've got a very like open sourcey sort of community sort of thing. So it's entirely possible that we're on like that we're using some ancient version of search that they've sort of not exactly stopped supporting, but like there's a much better version out there already. That somebody's developed that everybody just is assumed to use now, which is definitely a problem I've run into before with those sorts of projects. It's like, oh, you're using the built-in tool that does the thing? Oh yeah, nobody actually does that. not bitter or anything. It's just sort of like, come on, guys. Under the current triggers, four levels of evilness to give you different benefits. We recently discovered there's a fifth level between 0 and 1. There's a reason you just decided to not just do five levels for the Under the Current. Any hints at this mechanic that you should be looking at for finer granularity? There's actually... The way that it's recorded on the back end, I can literally go to max int to negative max int, and there's just sort of a, like, you'll very rarely go over, 20 in either direction, which is sort of the, 20 good or negative 20 bad, and it's each 5 is one of those stages. So I don't think there's anything in game right now that you could usefully use to figure that out, like in any sort of spading sense. That said, the vast majority of them are at those 5 breakpoints anyway. There's just like occasionally they're sort of like that's a little nice, or like that's a little douchey. That doesn't even quite merit a, like, you know, excuse me, sorry, still fighting off that cold a little bit. Should have brought some cough drops in here with me, but now I've got a cat in my lap, so I'm doomed. So there's some, like, some fine adjustments that I can do there. But there are a handful of places where you'll get sort of max level effect, and that's not actually as good or evil use as you can go. That's just sort of like the ends of the spectrum that the coin has specifically. The coin is probably still the best tool you have to figuring those out, certainly the most consistent. There are a couple of places where it might end up being like, it's like, oh, you know, if you, if there's like a random roll between 0 and like the amount of, you know, good or evil, if that's greater than the number of techniques that you have, then you get another technique of that, or mechanics like that, that are, like, not super useful for spading, and generally getting techniques tends to involve something like that, just so that it's sort of like, so you don't just keep getting spammed with techniques, essentially. So it'll have some sort of, like, either a random element to it that it needs to basically roll higher than the number of techniques you have, or you need to basically do something higher than the number of techniques you have, or you need to have all of them in your deck, just as a sort of reality check on how many of those techniques you're getting. Not that, like, in general circumstances, you know, having a 100 dive for covers, which doesn't generally use that, is, you know, game breaking or anything, right? But it's just sort of annoying if, you know, every time you used, oh, like with brutality, like if every time an enemy used brutality on you, you got another brutality. It's not like bad. It's just sort of cluttery, and I prefer not to do that. There are certain points, we were talking about painting yourself into a corner, there are certain points where it's like, that just seems like unclean, where I will sort of paint myself into a corner that way. But again, creativity and restrictions, breeding it. And some questions from Defitin. Haven't heard from you in a while. Hope you're doing well. I've recently come back to Metropolis. Well, absolutely welcome back. Left when Old Town first launched. I'd like to hear a summary of how things went. What major updates and changes you made in the last two or so years? Any big moments besides the community events like Halloween? Let's see. Yeah, depending on when exactly you left, there was pretty substantial event and revamp about the hacking system, where sort of the old hacking system, the hacking system is dead, long live the hacking system. There was an event surrounding that that was pretty cool, that I actually had almost forgotten, but maybe it was longer than 2 years ago, I'm not exactly sure. Seems like forever ago, but that might have been, you know. I only know that it wasn't last week because, you know, I remember it being sort of tied in with some of the Old Town stuff. And then, let's see, Cybernetics came in at some point. Oh, that would probably, that was also during the Old Town rollout when Cybernetics came in. And the, obviously, the Old Town quest itself, a couple of Halloweens, a couple of Christmases, which tend not to be, like, huge story things. The Metroplex Day continues to get more content, as does Christmas. And then, from there, pretty much dove into the, I guess there was a short break there before I really started diving into downtown. I'm trying to remember what I did during that. So definitely still some updates. Probably some like little revisions and revamps to areas. I feel like Dark Souls. Man. Yes. A lot of Doc's Quest might have been before you left. You know, Southside got a revamp at some point too. Either of those might have happened since then, you probably have noticed. If you're playing back through. But the big stuff since then has really been since I went into moving into the downtown stuff. We've got number of stores, the cellar door Oh, there's new side quest that sort of ties into that with getting to know the families and sort of their relationship with Third Eye. It's kind of cool. The museum on campus may have gotten opened since then. That was tied in there. That was probably before he left, so that was tied into Halloween's 3 and 4 years ago. So mostly the downtown stuff strikes me as recent, but there have certainly been times when I've been doing, I mean, more and less development, but for sure at least a couple of the other things that I mentioned fall into the chunk where you were gone. It's, I think there's a list of updates on the wiki that may or may not be helpful, just to get a little bit of a historical grounding. But yeah, the big things definitely the Old Town stuff coming out with cellar door, old cathedral, and the stuff around that. Have you had many harder to work on areas of the game? Let's see. I would say there are definitely places where, like, the tools are more that I have are more or less complicated. And I'm doing more things sort of by hand. And like, for example, with most encounters, I can do those in sort of a shorthand that gets interpreted, rather than coding everything indirectly. So like, instead of saying like, assign, two more XP to the perception XP variable and let that get caught, which I still do sometimes, depending on exactly what I'm doing. Like if I need to grant like a variable amount of perception based on something else that's going on, sometimes I'll do that manually. But vast majority of the time, it'll be more like, oh yeah, like, PER and then like however much perception I want. And I've basically coded it so that code on the back end looks through and is like, okay, I know what this means. They need to get 2 more perception XP. Here you go. Perception XP at the bottom. And it also it also has some nice effects where it sort of tallies it all up for you. So this is why you don't end up getting like even if you're fighting an enemy that like, for example, grants you some like will XP if you do a certain thing in the battle, it won't be like you get 1 will XP, you get 1 will XP, you get 1 will XP. It's all like adds it all up. So that handles a lot of that stuff. But there are certain places where there's less of that automation, where I've just sort of built less of that automation for myself. Or the stuff that's going on is so very different that it's difficult to dig in and do that automation. And hacking is definitely the one that is the most just like, okay, like there are things that work the same and they have like some level of there's some level of similarity between them, but not enough that I can really boil it down like that. Which is good and bad. It would probably be it's a lot easier to understand things and participate in things when there are rules rather than sort of guidelines. The hacking stuff is a lot more guideline-y. But that's probably the one that's most difficult to work on. Things I wanted to add, they're just too complicated to just simplify them or put them aside. There's some stuff that I've been sort of look at periodically, and I'm like, yeah, this still isn't like a thing that I can really do, and then put it back aside. But then I come back to it later, and I'm like, can I? No. The only one that I've really, and this kind of ties into some of the stuff we're talking about techniques with Al's questions, and this isn't really like a complication thing, just in sort of like how the games unfolded. There was a donation item I wanted to do not long after I started doing donation items, where you can sort of, it's like a training dummy, basically, and you can trade in, like, a bunch of a technique, a bunch of any technique for, you can trade in, like, 10 of a melee technique for one of, like, the training dummy's melee technique, basically, that sort of approach. But with sort of the way that techniques are gained in the game and sort of the rhythm that's developed from that, it wouldn't be great. And so that very easily might show up in the future, but in a very different way. To some degree, and then there are other things that I've sort of just set aside a number of times. One big one is, at some point I need to dive in and fix the REST code, which is just kind of a mess. I want to do pets at some point, which aren't going to be like buddies that follow you around and kill enemies for you, generally speaking, but like, I'll be able to, like, raise cute animals, because who doesn't want to raise cute animals? And that's just sort of like, there's a lot of places where it's like, okay, this needs to have, like, a, like, really, like, firmly designed, replicatable sort of structure, and it's never quite gotten there, so just, like, it's like, I could make this, but it would be a complete mess, or I can sort of chew on it for another year and see if something pops out. Those are sort of like two big categories. There's not a lot that I've really like permanently put aside. Like there's a donation item that, I'm thinking about the training dummy one. There was sort of during my brainstorming for like the very first unearthly item, when I came out with the puzzle box. Puzzle box was sort of like the winner of that battle, but that brainstorm. I mean, obviously, like, especially when you're first doing it, like, there's a bunch of, like, oh, yeah, totally, this, and this, and this, this other thing, this weird thing. And some of them, some of the other things from that list have come out, like the Wolfskin Belt, But like the training dump was also on there. But there are other things on that list that just like, haven't come out yet. And some of those would be totally fine to come out whenever. And others are sort of like, it doesn't really, either doesn't really work as far as code-wise or just like some of that early stuff doesn't necessarily fit super well in the time of the game. Have I been enjoying any games recently? Yeah. I've actually been, this might sound a little silly, but I've been trying to actually play more games. Like, I do a lot of game development. One of the things that does means for a lot of people, you just don't end up playing that many games, and that's actually a pretty serious problem in some cases. So it's like, okay, I have to play games. Puyo and I go hang out with some of our friends, but more her friends, probably every couple of months, and do like a pretty big board game night. That sort of like adds a lot of board games to my list. I've been doing, let's see, a little more gaming on like Steam. So I've been playing Slay the Spire, not super recently, but I've played quite a bit of Slay the Spire, really enjoying that. It has a sort of, I mean, not exactly the same mechanics or anything as Metroplexity, but has the same sort of, like, cards for attacks, drawing, back up. Actually, I think you might discard stuff you don't use in Slay the Spire. Yeah, I guess it's a little more Dominion that way. But yeah, it's the same sort of, like, computer kind of tabletop. And it's doing some similar things with how it is. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Did some Sentinels of the Multiverse also on Steam, which actually did just totally start out as a board game. Glad I'm playing that one on Steam. There's just a lot of fiddly sort of modifiers, map stuff that I'm not a huge fan of in my board games, but I mean, computers take care of it, so whatever. Then I was really heavily involved in the playtest for, it's just being called Pathfinder, but Pathfinder 2, the role-playing game. went from Pathfinder to role-playing game to, I think, just Pathfinder, but I think everyone's probably going to call it Pathfinder 2 or P2. At least until, you know, it's been out for another 5 years or whatever. That was, I mean, playtesting is a beast, and I don't think that the majority of people who are involved in that really understood what an actual playtest looks like, and I'm as guilty as that as a lot of other, coding folks, right? Like, for a long time we were saying, like, oh, we're in sort of, you know, beta-ish, and it's like, it's not, I mean, it's beta in that it's not done, and we don't say this anymore, but it's beta because it's not done, but it's also not, like, kind of like an unplayable train wreck, which, when you're really doing, like, when you're doing actual, like, playtesting, it's not only should you expect an unplayable train wreck in places, but you should expect to just, like, hammer at certain things until they're right. And less on the unplayable train wreck side, but more on the hammering on certain things until the right side. That playtest was a lot more like an actual playtest, like the kind that you would get paid for, than the sort of, like, we're going to call it a playtest, but it's just sort of like early access. That was problematic for a lot of people, but the game itself is looking really good, personal opinion. Let's see, it played a it was a while ago. It might have been actually since my last podcast, but I played a bunch of Monster Prom, which if anybody's out there being like, damn it, why aren't there more American dating sims? I thought Monster Prom's freaking great, and would totally suggest. A lot of fun. I mean, not like totally different in every like tonal everything from Metroplexity, but very funny, very and some like middling to good mechanics. Like I'm not gonna say like you don't expect much out of a dating sim, although to be fair, having played a number of like actual like dating sims, either that Puyo brought over or like have been translated, most of them like mechanically are kind of not there to a large extent, or like they'll just sort of be weirdly wrapped around some other genre, which can be awkward but is often better than like the sort of hollow mechanics they end up with. Monster Prom, not mechanically like amazing, but like mechanically like 6 or 7 out of 10, and like, but like writing wise, the only real complaint with the writing is that there isn't more of it, which is usually, I mean, a pretty good sign, right? Some of the actually the same things you'll run into with Metroplex too. It's like, oh yeah, I've seen this encounter like 8 times. Like, we're good. And there's just, to some extent, that's unavoidable. Have you been working on any other medias that aren't games specifically? Mostly games. I mean, not necessarily Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes, though. I had a game entered in a contest with some print play folks that they were actually very pleased with and are looking to sort of do, trying to see if we can get that published. But that means getting some art put together, which means, as is my wont, being like, Puyo, can you do art for me in this genre that like you've literally never done before and will feel really uncomfortable about but do really well at? She's, of course, kind of like, I'll see what I can do. And so we'll see how that goes. And assuming the art comes in, I'll do another like round of playtesting for it. And if people are interested, I might send out some Word docs with the rules and stuff. We'll probably have to polish those a little bit. But yeah, assuming people are interested in that game existing, we'll be launching that at some point. Board game, I should be clear. Actual, like, physical object. It's very strange. with, like, components and junk. Should be relatively, I mean, probably like a, looking like a $19, $20 sort of price point, keeping things pretty low, which is challenging in its own right. So yeah, I've been working on that, working on some Pathfinder and Starfinder stuff with my spouse. So you are much more likely to find anything with that under her name. And doing a little bit of that also on my own with Shadows Over Vothic, which I have poor timing on, because there was actually a really good deal on all of their PDFs for Halloween, because it's sort of a Lovecraftian horror-type setting, which is actually, I mean, it's for Pathfinder, but it's not set in a Pathfinder setting, obviously, Galarian. For for anyone listening who hasn't heard me talking a ton about Pathfinder before, it's basically a branch off of Dungeons and Dragons that came out about 10 years ago now, and is sort of D&D went old D&D, as it is generally called now, first edition, second edition, third edition, 3.5, and then third edition and 3.5 were kind of were released under the OGL, which is the Open Gaming License, which is sort of basically their open source games, essentially. So all of the like rules and stuff you can use, but all of like intellectual property, in the sense of like setting material, is still maintained by whoever wrote it, essentially. So 3.0 and 3.5 came out, and then they released 4th edition, which was not a bad game. Actually, I think has a lot of improvements that were very striking, but was incredibly different from 3.5 and incredibly divisive. And they had some pretty serious issues with sort of the rollout of it, both from a PR perspective, where they were like, well, you should totally switch to this new game because the old game is garbage, but the old game was obviously like something that a lot of people loved a lot, and so that really got people's hackles up, which resulted in a lot of flame wars, which got people's hackles even more up, and resulted in, even for groups that might have very much considered getting over, you'd a lot of times have like one person in the group who was like, no, fuck them. And that means basically your group isn't going to switch over unless you're going to kick that person out. So they lost a surprising number of groups that way. And then also, some people were just not, either not comfortable with the rules changes or not comfortable with rather significant settings changes. They did some real weird things to the Forgotten Realms, which is sort of the main D&D setting. Like if you read Forgotten Realms is just really confusing, but they made a lot of changes to the setting that were really kind of I'm not even a fan of Forgotten Realms. We're sort of like in the lines of like how Star Wars people, a lot of them got really bent out of shape with like Disney being like, okay, when they started putting out the new movies, just being like, okay, all of the EU, all the expanded universe stuff, it's just not canon anymore. We just can't. It wasn't the exact same thing that happened, but it was a similar sort of like seismic shift. And it was pretty difficult for a lot of longtime fans to swallow on that front, and plenty of people also just did not like Forgotten Realms, and hadn't really been like the official setting before, so they were like, well, I don't like this thing, and you just broke it, like, why should I play with this setting? And there was a lot a lot of bad. The vast majority of it not actually being, like, game design problems, though. Like, there are only a handful of things that I'd actually say, like, the designer screwed up on this and that. And some of those are pretty significant, but nothing that justifying the sort of mass exodus that occurred at the beginning of 4th edition. But because 3.5 had been released effectively open source, Paizo, which is the company that Liz actually works for, had also been put in a hard situation because they had been doing, so Dungeons & Dragons had two magazines for a long time associated with it, which were hilariously to me, but not very imaginatively, were named Dungeon Magazine and Dragon Magazine. Dungeon had sort of the adventures, and Dragon had, like, new rules content. And these have been going back since, like, the, I don't know, 70s, 80s. Like, it was long and proud tradition of wildly varying quality, but they've been mainstays of the game. And the people who were actually making Wizards, Wizards, the company's Wizards of the Coast, who own Magic, the Gathering, had basically didn't want to be producing magazines anymore, had farmed it out to some people who had left the company, basically, for various reasons. Those people were Paizo. They were producing the magazines. And with the changeover, Wizards was also like, okay, we're not renewing your contract to do the magazines. We're going to make them all online, no print, nothing. Which is whatever. Not my preferred method of consuming magazines. But Paizo was basically like, okay, well, that's like, you know, our entire, like, line of work, so we should figure out what we're doing with our lives. And started publishing basically a new magazine of adventures, effectively. Well, more complicated than that, but basically like an adventure that you get in installments that would end up being like one huge adventure every 6 months, called Adventure Paths. Very good, very successful, but weren't able to switch over to 4th edition for the combination of it wasn't an open license anymore, so they needed to wait for basically legal stuff to get worked out, which was not getting worked out. So they were basically in a situation where they had to either put out their own game or basically just be producing adventures for a game that didn't exist anymore for like a while. They weren't really sure when the end point of that was. Turns out it would have been several years. They totally would have gone out of business. So, well, I mean, obviously we can never know, but like, it would have been real bad for them. So they ended up putting out Pathfinder then, which is sort of 3.5 with like as much as they could fix in the amount of time that they actually had to turn around and print it. Before, like, you know, people noticed too much that they couldn't get books for the rules to play the adventure paths they were putting out. It was a huge problem. Anyway, so Pathfinder version 1. So putting out 2, this was like 10 years ago, so they're putting out 2 shortly, and it's a pretty substantially different game. But version 1 was very much just like D&D with like some bandages applied to stop the worst of the rules related bleeding, because the version of D&D that they were patching by that point was like almost a decade old itself. I think it was like 8 years, 9 years, something like that. It was getting on in the years itself. In the meantime, 4th edition came and went, and 5th edition has come out, which, for whatever people's personal opinions are, has way less divisive than 4th edition, and has brought a bunch of new people into a hobby, which is fucking great. It's a wonderful hobby. But really, as many people as can enjoy it, the better. Anyway, so... Wow! Digression aside, Shadows Over Vothic is an alternate setting that you can play with the Pathfinder rules that is really more of like a horror type thing. Gets a lot more sort of bald-facedly political in some ways, which is a little bit interesting. There's some pretty serious, like, I mean, the the factions in it. And this is a lot of stuff that I sort of like. Basically, they were like, do you want to take this over? And I was like, I'll take this over. But, like, I'm not, like, the... Not sure I would have made exactly the same decisions as on this, but in a lot, it's basically set in a on a continent where you have essentially they're called Vendari and they worship the quote one true god, but they're essentially German Catholics. Like, all their names are Germans, all of the words that are brought over from their language are German. The one true god is not, like, quite the Catholic god, but, like, he's got saints, he's got, like, you know, orders of knights, a lot like the Crusaders, the various crusading knightly orders, things like that. And, like, so there's a lot, and the sort of the natives in the area are very much, like, one of them is very much the, they're called the Romani, but they're basically the Romani. They just removed an A. So, anyway, there's a lot of, like, it's both a horror setting and, like, a very, it's like, okay, like, they're not, not shying away from the really direct real-world allegories either, which is an interesting dance there. Because there's a lot of very, very real world, very horrific things that have happened involving the interactions of a lot of these groups. And there's also a more tribal culture called the Brioda, who are, less directly another group, but they're sort of, they're very much a stand-in for cultures outside of Europe that the Europeans thought of as, like, primitive savages, basically, which in Mol is a lot of cultures. So they're a little more varied, I guess, in a lot of ways. But anyway, so it's basically, a fantasy horror type game with a pinch of colonialism for flavor, I guess. I've been working a fair bit on that, and if I didn't finish my sentence earlier, that there was a good sale for Halloween, which is why I was sort of like, oh, this isn't the best time to be talking about Bothic, but it's still out there, and there's, like, Cyber Monday sales, so sure, search Shadows Over Bothic, and there's a main book and some side books, and very well-reviewed, sell pretty well, as far as, gaming PDFs go. Fun to work on. Working on some Starfinder stuff for Legendary Games. And Starfinder's Pathfinder in space. So it's sort of science fantasy. We have warp travel, we have faster than light travel, but everyone uses the same, largely the same faster than light travel, and it works sort of the same way for everyone. Not because, like, that's the physical law or, like, coincidence, but because, like, one of the gods, a being sort of ascended to godhood and just, like, gave everybody, plans to this. So they're, like, you can go into, like, to, like, cave-dwelling, like, Stone Age culture, and they'll have, like, plans for a drift engine, which is the type of name that's etched into the wall. Like, they have no idea what this means or what it does, but, like, the gods were just like, hey, no, here you go. Well, this one individual god. Like, here you go. Everybody have fun. And so it's, depending on what you're playing, it tends to be a lot of the material is a little lighter than in Pathfinder, just because, especially when you get into, like, Starfinder Society. But there's a whole universe out there, and there's a lot of, you can go from very dark to very zany as you desire. But the stuff I'm working on with them is conversion stuff, pretty straightforward, but it's for a sort of less science fantasy and more sword and planet, which is not very helpful. But it's more of a like, it's like, yeah, it's fantasy, but we've got like clockworks and like portals that go to other worlds and lots of creepy shit going on in the adventure that I just finished for them. Which I think has been put out now. But yeah. So a lot of basically still just gaming. Like, I've got a lot of kinds of game that I work on or can be asked to work on, but not a lot really outside of that. I have to play. I do a little bit of coding on the side, but basically as little of that as I can manage. It's just sort of, you know, something to do to make sure there's food on the table. And thankfully, thanks to stuff like Patreon and donations and the projects that I certainly enjoy working on way more than coding. To be clear, I mean, like, coding for, like, randos, right? I enjoy coding a bunch of stuff. Although, as always, it's sort of like, sometimes it's like, Why is this doing this? Oh, sweet God. But that's part of the point. Anyway, so yeah. Other than Metroplex and Mad Heroes, there's a bunch of other games. And then a little bit of co-creating. Some questions from Argath. Some Halloween-y stuff. Okay. You mentioned before that you calibrate the amount of money we need after the amount of money that's available to active players. Is that going to be kept steady, lower? I have found that generally keeps pretty steady from year to year. I need to at some point write a script that takes into account really like fungible sort of items, because not this year, but there was a previous year where people gave like 2 or 3 million credits to Halloween, and the amount of liquid credits in the economy actually increased, like not by a lot, but by like a couple hundred thousand credits. And it's like, the hell. And eventually, sort of going back through it, I realized that people had just been holding on to, instead of credits, they'd been holding on to it in, like, in gold, basically, cred ships and loot from the ghost ship and so forth. And when they were like, oh, shit, you know, I need a couple hundred thousand credits real quick, let me, you know, multi-use these guys and come up with a couple hundred thousand credits. And so it ended up being sort of funny with that. So I need a more expansive way to do that, because otherwise I'll end up not really knowing exactly what you want. Since we all seem to be running on fumes by the time the party started, were you going to do any sort of comment for amount of energy required for getting the party set up? Well, that one's kind of interesting. Like, I don't necessarily, like, I want the energy choices to be choices, and that involves a bit of back and forth, right? Where I mean, so it's not so much energy for that as sort of like person days. Because, I mean, just measuring it based on energy is actually way worse than measuring the credits without the items. And as amazing as it would be to be able to break down, like, how much, like, if I had a one-day event, like, how much energy people would have available for that, that'd be really cool to see. It's extremely difficult to figure out, like, and intentionally so. Like, there's a lot of, like, it's like, oh, like, this person has, you know, a bunch of really good sushi stashed, right? Well, do they have the right skills to make that awesome? No? Okay, then they probably actually want to use this other food, which will give them slightly more energy. Oh, and going into another person, they're like, oh, this person has a skill, they're not a very good sushi. It's like, oh, but they actually have some really good fish that it would be totally worth for them to turn into sushi, even just for the one-day event. So there's like, the decision tree for that would be completely insane. Which is fine. Like, that's not something that terribly bothers me. just because, like, I'm not going to do it. But it ends up being more a question of person days than actually, I'm just the number of active player days is something that is measurable, as opposed to the amount of energy. There was quite a bit of stuff that didn't end up being able to get done this time for a variety of reasons. And that's, like, and optimally, like, what I should be shooting for in theory is, like, there's sort of like a, so if you get, like, if you have a line down the middle that's, you have exactly enough energy to get everything that I've coded done. And that's, like, perfect as far as efficiency of, like, my time. Which is something that, like, is valuable, obviously. And obviously everything sort of to the left of that, where there's not enough content, that's bad. and it gets worse the further left you go, right? Like, if you end up repeating some activities for, like, you know, 10-20% of the time, it's probably not a big deal. If you end up, like, burning through all the content and have, like, days left, that's a problem. But there's also a separate question where, there are two sort of layers of choices with the Halloween stuff. There's choices that affect the setup, and then choices that affect the final Halloween results. So, and I mean, some of them affect both, whatever. But for choices that affect the final Halloween results to matter, there needs to be some leeway there of, there's content you're not going to see, right, in the final Halloween. Just because, like, you know, you chose to, you know, put up all the bats, but not any spiders, or vice versa. Like, you're going to see, if you don't put up any spiders, you don't see any spiders in the last one. Or it might even be a more directly opposed thing where, like, maybe you put up some spiders, but, like, there's so many more bats that, like, the bats won, and you get a bunch of bat-themed stuff and no spider-themed stuff. Like, there's all sorts of stuff that can happen there. But for those choices to matter, there needs to be content there that you don't see, right? And similarly, for choices in the setup to matter, like choices that affect the setup, that means that there's stuff in the setup that you don't see. And it's possible that that's just not something you want to do, I guess. It would certainly make my life easier. But if those types of choices are in there, which they were this year, obviously, for the fact that you didn't see everything in the setup, and have tended to be over the previous years. Possibly there were some more this year than so this year and the other downtown had a very similar level for those. And different stuff didn't end up happening. Which is kind of cool. But the but for those sorts of choices to exist, like there's you end up basically that can't exist at the line where, you know, all of the content that's exactly consumed, right? Like it needs to have more content than time, or some sort of like teeter-totter type thing, right? Where you know, this if like the this is not how Halloween this year worked, but if like the brick maze and the mirror maze had been like conflicting for space or something, and every chunk of the brick maze that you like knock down, or every mirror that you break in the mirror maze opens up more space for the other, right? That sort of like direct conflict. And there was some stuff like that going on, too, just not that specific symbol. Then that will, that like ends up taking out chunks of content in a very similar way. And it's a question of how much, like how those choices work. Like, in this case, a lot of the choices were just like, how do you want to spend your time? Like, what's important to you? And that's, I think, really in line with the rest of the game. Obviously, like, at a very different level, since you're like, choices as a group, and there's a lot more energy involved, and whatever. But, like, that's the same, like, types of choices that you're making. Like, you have a lot of choices that are just, like, excuse me, how do you choose to spend your energy? And a lot of choices that are, like, okay, you choose this, that's what you get. Like, sort of the skill choices. Like, how are you going to finish this quest? That sort of thing, where it's sort of mutually exclusive. And that obviously works a little bit differently when you're talking about a bunch of people. So it's more like, 100 people spend 1,000 energy on one side, 100 people spend like 20 energy on the other side. We'll say 100 people spend 100 energy, because it's hard for 100 people to spend 20. Then, is doing interesting. Anyway. Would there be any way to help troubleshoot triggers events before the event? I don't think there's an easy way to do that. Mini events or micro events to test the triggers might be valid. I mean, I don't think realistically that there's really a way to do that. And I will say that the main thing that locked out a bunch of stuff this year that I was not expecting at all had nothing to do with a bug. Like, it was just, there was a choice that I was expecting, reasonable subset of people to make that, like, nobody was making, which is great, right? Like, that's the magic of Halloween, right? Because I was totally broadsided by it, and not necessarily, I don't necessarily think that it made for the most enjoyable Halloween, which is a problem, but it also kind of was like, but it was just not what I was expecting. So I didn't have like a backup plan in the content for it, like I do with a lot of things, like, if people like aren't getting this specific item, like there's another route through it that's just less effective, whatever. Or like, you know, oh, this is gated behind the specific item, so it's very not load-bearing. It's like, this isn't gated behind any item. Like, just nobody's taking this option. Like, it's just an option. It's there for everybody. Nobody's clicking it. And I don't mean literally nobody. I mean just, like, a vanishingly small percentage of the people who went into this choice encounter took the sort of the easy path. And it was like, oh, well, I was expecting, like, some people to do that, and it was just was not happening. So that was there obviously were like the usual complement of bugs and stuff, which are just going to happen. But that was not, if you're like, wow, the Halloween stuff like rolled out this really like weird, chunky, like pace. That's not like, I'm not going to be like, that's all your fault, because, like, it's entirely possible that I should have seen it coming. Like, I just did not. So that's, yeah, not a fucked up thing. That was a fucked up thing. It just wasn't a, like, I put a 1 where a 0 should have been thing. That was a, like, I put a, you know, 250 where, like, a 250 very easily could have been. People just didn't. Don't quote me on the 250. Like, I think that's the number. It's been awesome to stare at it. So far as I can tell, everyone received the same prizes this year, the hard hat and the claw. Were there further hidden prizes we just didn't get to? Those prizes are almost always based on the choices that you make. And so, I mean, pretty much every year, I rearranged the prizes a little bit, actually, really specifically because there's a choice that never got taken, ever. Like, I think out of the, like, 9, maybe, yeah, no, I think 9 years that they had item, I would guess there's probably, like, there's definitely less than 9 of those items total. On the server, I would have to do a bunch of queries to figure it out, but I think there might seriously be, like, I noticed one of those getting handed out once, and that was, like, surprising to me when it happened. But what ended up kind of happening is, and this ended up getting biased a little bit by some of the other unexpected stuff, but yeah, people just made very similar choices this year, both in the extent that of what I was sort of talking about, avoiding some of these sort of obvious choices, quote obvious choices, some of the easy choices. But also in, I I feel like there actually are a couple of people who probably should have gotten some of the other items, but it's possible they either didn't report them or I wasn't keeping very close track on like an individual level, because that's just not the part that matters, really. There were sort of like two sets of three prizes, and which of each you got was sort of, was unrelated. It was unrelated. Yeah. As if you talk about like the big item prizes, and then there's like candy and stuff. So it's entirely, it's possible. I would not actually be surprised with everybody getting hard hat. The claw, I would be surprised if everybody literally got the claw. But I'd have to dig to see if that's actually the case. The code on that is pretty simple, so I would doubt that it broke down. But I mean, I could check into it, but at least on the hard hat, I would assume that people were between some of the choices that would have made it easier to have an impact on the things that the other people, hard hat people, wanted, were not available because of choices that happened during it, which is problematic, sort of. I mean, choices are going to matter. They're going to create some sort of, they're going to matter, right? I hope that doesn't sound flip or anything, but that's sort of where that's at. But yeah, the choices that were made cut off some other options that might have made it easier to get the other items. But they were still definitely possible to get. But it wouldn't entirely surprise me, like I said, with the hard hat, if people went all in on the hard hat and didn't do anything else. Was the bad spy who is totally not the vampire frat boy meant to be permanently suppressed on Shoe Away? So, a lot of the choices are such that, and this is actually something that I put in the last couple of years to address complaints, like actually the stuff that you're talking about right now. Or we're talking about a previous post, where the amount of effort that's put into a given thing determines the number of times that it will show up, rather than necessarily it not showing up, which hasn't resulted in any less complaining about these things, so it's actually easier for me to do it the other way. So I might just go back to having things not show up at all so that people don't have to worry about it. Having things that sort of, quote, lose, not show up. But for a very simple example, things like the number of gargoyles that you could interact with on Halloween night last year was determined, not exactly directly, but was determined by the number of gargoyles that were installed, like in a very linear sort of basis. Excuse me. I should probably talk less. But But it's entirely possible. You should have been able to get rid of him for the rest of the day, whether that happened by killing him or shooing him away or whatever. There was a limited number of basically everything going around. And similarly, how hard it was to get through the maze and how much stuff there was in the maze. That's all dependent on what you guys did. Is this our new university pumpkin encounter, at least for a few years? Would make the shoe equivalent to Smash Pumpkin. No, I don't think so. I didn't even get to see the empty fountain. Was it meant to be suppressed while under Halloween Spirit Threshold, or did it just get unlucky RNG? You might have gotten unlucky? There's an encounter, it may have been that one, and there's usually, there's usually something like this every year, where there'll be an encounter, that gives you Halloween Spirit, a non-combat gives you Halloween Spirit, specifically if you're out of Halloween Spirit, both to make sure that everybody has Halloween Spirit, come on, it's Halloween, have some Halloween Spirit, but also sort of as like a, you know, if you're eating Halloween candy and engaging with things in a Halloween-y manner, then you won't get that encounter, which sort of, like, means I think that Halloween Spirit is a wonderful thing that everyone should have, but is kind of like a energy tax, so to speak. So it balances out a little bit, like, you know, if you're eating, like, your optimal food and going and doing all of your optimal things, that's a little bit of a counterweight there, as opposed to people who are eating all of their Halloween foods, which admittedly are still pretty good food, and doing their Halloween-y things, they will get, like, proportionally more energy. If that makes sense. Is this new Patreon stuff going to make things easier as far as Christmas? Less fancy, more fancy. Christmas... I wouldn't expect any substantial changes, but I do intend to ask the patrons if that's what they want me to do next month, put a bunch of extra extra Christmas stuff in there. Otherwise, I just plan to, you know, add a couple more kinds of snowmen and some new snow-related rewards, and people will discover some percentage of them and maybe figure out the snow snakes this year. Maybe catch some of the other things that have been scurrying around the edges in less obvious ways. but it's entirely possible at some point that, like, I'll be adding in something more robust. If that's what the patrons are looking for. I mean, I like Halloween, not Halloween, sorry, it's Christmas, more or less, as it is. It makes me happy. But if people want more Christmas, I think that that's in some ways a better choice than more Halloween, in that the way that we've been doing Christmas and Metroplex Day, it's sort of like, okay, like I can, like you want a big snowball fight every Christmas, I can just put in snowball fight. And it'll just happen every Christmas, right? Rather than Halloween, which is more of a, like, one-and-done type thing. Otherwise, how are things holding up on your side? Any cool costumes from trick-or-treaters? Oh, actually, I do have a cool thing to talk about with Halloween, if you can deal with me coughing anymore. Well, things are holding up. Well, I probably mentioned last time they were having our house remodeled, and so we're in a weird space. We're still in the weird space. And I obviously have cold, but they're remodeling the house, and they pull up the floorboards like you do, because they need to level our floors badly. It's like 130 years old, and like the original floors were still there, like under the carpet. They just sort of tacked carpet over it, which is, you know, awesome and exactly something you should do every time. But, like, you could, like, feel boards twisting when you stepped on them and stuff in the dining room, which was actually super awkward because it was not only in the dining room, but it was also, like, on the way through the dining room to anywhere else. It's kind of like, oh, this feels like it might collapse at any moment. And, like, we have friends that are, like, professional weightlifters. So, like, they are not light people. Obviously, even if we didn't, like, you don't want your boards doing strange non-board things. So anyway, they're pulling up all the floor, and it's sort of like, wow, we can just sort of, like, see the outside through, like, where the foundation should be right there. Yep, sure can. This is not as much the end of the world as it would be with, like, a 30-year house, because our foundation is basically just, like, stacked field stone. Which, I mean, is not great, and obviously has survived 130 years, so hard to talk too much crap, but they just sort of need to probably jack up the entire house and, like, fill it, maybe put a little mortar in there, just as maybe, whatever they end up doing. But, yeah, we knew going in that something would be horribly wrong that we didn't know about. Just like with the age of the house, like, you just assume that it's going to cost, like, 10 to 20% more than the estimate, because they're going to find something. And this is probably our 10 to 20% more than the estimate. But we're still waiting to see on that. So we're definitely still going to be here for a while, despite the fact that the early side of the estimates for when they would be done would have been now. And yeah, there's no floors or, like, walls, really, or ceilings. There's, like, external walls, but, like, all the internal walls are down to the studs still. As well they should be if they're doing the type of work they need to do. But yeah, it's kind of a mess. But as far as cool Halloween stuff, Liz is in this early music group called The Early Interval. I actually think they have a website name. Probably like theearlyinterval.com or something. Or like inow.org or something. I got nothing. Oh, there we go. Theearlyinterval.com. So, totally brought to you by Wix, which is fine. And because it means less volunteer webmastering, which is good, because I don't do any volunteer webmastering. Do not ask me to master your website, unless you're going to give me a stack of money, in which case we can talk. Anyway, they did a concert at place in Columbus called Club Diversity, which, as you might be able to guess from the name, is a giant, like, LGBT hangout, and has been for, God, quite a while. Like, I don't know exactly how long, but, like, long enough that there's definitely, like, yeah, let's not hang out by the scary straight people who might hurt us, sort of thing. Anyway, so they did a thing at Club Diversity, and it was a Halloween program, and so it was all this, like, 14th to 16th century, like, seasonally appropriate / spooky type music. So it's like, we're gonna have, like, this, folktale set to music that was, like, popular song in, like, 1600s era France about, like, this dude that's a werewolf and, like, how his wife totally betrays him and, like, screws him over, which is the really funny thing. There's a lot of really funny things about it. It's a humorous sort of thing. But from a modern perspective, it's interesting how much in it the werewolf is at no level the bad guy. Like, the werewolf is 100% like, I don't want to say he's exactly the protagonist, but is 100% just like, okay, dude, like, loves his king, loves his wife, loves his kids. I think his kids come up at some point, and is just like, trying to help everybody out. Is like, is honest with his wife, which ends up causing all the problems, which is not necessarily the best moral lesson, but, you know, 1600s, what can you do? But yeah, it's very much not like, werewolf dude kills village. It's like, werewolf dude is betrayed by his wife and gets stuck in wolf form for, like, literally years. And eventually, like, the king figures out that, eventually he meets his wife and her new husband, who's the one who, like, convinced her to betray him, and, like, basically totally mauls him, I think bites off her nose and mauls him, something like that. And the king's basically like, no, this wolf has been, like, the friendliest dude. Like, I let this wolf play with my kids, and, like, it's never been a problem. He totally mauled these people. They probably deserved it. And finds out, obviously, that they did deserve it, and figures out how to transform him back into his human form. The thing about it that was very striking was how much, like, in modern media, we've got sort of like this, you know, werewolves are either, I mean, sort of ravening, like, horror monsters, or this sort of, like, backlash to that, where they're, you know, love interests in paranormal romances. And how in the story, it's just, like, a dude, like, and very much like in D&D terms or Pathfinder terms, a lawful good, like, dude, like, totally all right. And we always get this sort of idea, I think a lot of it based on how we choose things to integrate into modern media, where, you know, they're monsters, right? You know, we bring things into modern media to be monsters, and, but, you know, we think because of that, you know, everything was monsters back then, all of these things were so scary. And it's like, no, like, no, the scary thing about this was, like, betrayal. And, like, you know, thinking you can trust someone when you can't, which, like, is shitty. Like, and is still shitty. And, like, the fact that this dude was a werewolf was, like, possibly a metaphor that we're missing. And possibly just, like, oh, yeah, that's a cool thing to do. Like, he's totally a werewolf. Anyway. I thought it was really cool. But they did costuming and everything, and they had a guest singer who came in, like, full fucking, like, court dress from, like, more or less that era, like, long white dress, like, the sort of a very French-style dress, French-style, like, face painting, the wig from, we associated with one of the Louis, whichever one was trying to cover up his syphilis. That might have been all of them, I don't know. So yeah, it was really cool, and, the guy whose house we're staying at was dressed up as a werewolf, and Liz had this amazing devil costume, because they have a piece at one point that's Paradiso et Inferno or something like that. I'm not sure what the middle word is, but Paradise and the Inferno, and where she's doing the tenor part, and one of their other members is doing the guest musician was doing the soprano part, and it's basically like a devil and an angel arguing about like the relative merits of their given afterlives, it was great. Like, it was super fun. Everybody had a great time. Very, very different atmosphere, because it was just like a upstairs at this bar listening to like music that would have like been performed at a bar, which I think is one of those another one of those things we sort of miss out. Actually, have like stuffy chamber music, and it's like, yeah, this would have been like either in a bar or being played like while we were all sitting around, like, again, drinking, having conversations, and like eating dinner, just like socializing in some way. And it's like, man, this stuff, like, in I find I enjoy it even more in sort of like the intended thing. But yeah, that was great. And they're probably going to do that again. So, if you're in Columbus. Penguin Pyro actually has some questions, too. I'm back! Did you miss me? I did. Should we expect Sightlink to do anything during Novos hacking? That idea has come up before. I don't think I have used it for anything yet. But it would not surprise me to see that pop up in the future. Why is it that stealth, evasion, melee, ranged, and etheric all have techniques that change forms when following techniques of other types? Fire mostly seems to be left out of the loop and only interacts with itself. I mean, thematic to some extent. Fire kind of has its own thing going on. And largely, fire kind of begets more fire, if that makes sense. So there certainly is some design space for that, you know, like planting bombs on people and so forth. But I feel like not the design space so much, but like the conceptual space for that is a bit smaller. We just haven't hit it yet. Are there any adverse side effects to Eclipse besides the hallucinations? Something more pharmacological in nature? You've actually met some people with some of those effects. As far as the primary effects of Eclipse are really tied into the hallucinations and some sort of like related things. Like you'll have some effects on the lines of like dizziness, probably drowsiness, because everything causes drowsiness. Synesthesia is a not uncommon side effect, but that's tied into the hallucinations, right? As is the dizziness. Those it's the primary thing. The amount of like actual eclipse that you need is pretty small to get the effects. It's pretty small and pretty fast acting, actually. So I would expect more issues related to the hallucinations and sort of like the weirdness. and some of that weirdness has some pretty serious pharmacological effects, but not directly. In a three-way fight between the Yakuza, Omnitech Special Forces, and the best Midgard security, not counting Special Projects, who would win? Oh, man, that's a good question. I would expect Omnitech Special Forces to win, like, with the exception, like, so if we're talking, like, the best of the Yakuza, as we are sort of the best of the other two, I would like small team stuff. Like if you can narrow it down, like if you're fielding like a squad rather than an army, the best of like the best of the Yakuza would probably pull it out. But Omnitech Special Forces is pretty serious and not messing around. Midgard Security would not make a particularly good showing of it. I mean, they're dangerous enough in their own right, but they don't really approach Omnitech Special Forces. Unless, yeah, you get into special projects, which is its whole own ball of wax. That, yeah, it throws a big wrench into things. See, I would say under normal circumstances, like sort of in a who do you want sent after you the least way, Omnitech Special Forces, if we're talking like, you know, some sort of like three-way like Cyber Bowl type thing, where there's like a limited number of participants on each side, then you could probably start getting into a situation where the Yakuza is doing as well or better. Three of the unearthly hacking-related items, Mascot Adapter, Mysterious Cloak, and Midgard Player, I feel are a couple of notches above what we currently have available. As more areas and content come up, will we eventually see earthly hacking equipment that can match their power? Yeah, I would expect to see some pretty good hacking stuff as far as the really just downtown in general. Hacking equipment even more so than a lot of the like weapons and armor. Like weapons and armor also definitely get better as you go, but the hacking equipment is a lot more closely tied to well. And I would expect to see some more stuff as you go up the chain, as it were. Do you ever worry that people will discover and then never use low-power techniques and equipment that are difficult to obtain, thereby never learning their additional content? Not sure worried is the right word. Like, it's certainly possible. There's definitely a couple of skills tied to something that I'm pretty sure people have just sort of overlooked, possibly for that reason, possibly just because I think they found all of its content. This sort of ties back into some of the Halloween stuff, although on a much broader scale. I would rather there still be stuff out there for people to find than run out of stuff. And I guess some of the Avatar stuff we were talking about, too. Somebody could roll in like, today and find skills that have been in the game for literally years that nobody has. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool, I must say. It doesn't bother me too much. But it is something that I'm sort of aware of. Like, you know, something needs to either be pretty clearly mysterious or have a pretty obvious use, or just be high-powered enough that people are going to use it all the time for them to discover the uses beneath it. I've always felt it odd that Metroplex Day Smoky Dragon requires special techniques to defeat, but most of those techniques are unearthly combat. The only two exceptions that can be obtained before defeating the Smoky Dragon, Necrotic Fire and Fire Serpent, are there other smoky techniques hiding within earthly content, or are we stuck with just these two? If so, any hints on where to obtain them? There are some. I don't necessarily think that you need smoky techniques, but there are, I think, a couple of others that you can get through through chemistry and the like. But I think that there might be another way to defeat it, which is not quite so smoke intensive, as it were. Let me check real quick, because now I am all curious. Smoke dragon. Oh, look at the smoke. Oh, yeah, there's, okay, I'm the worst person. Yeah, there's definitely another way to do that, which is hopefully one of those things that people will be like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. I should have figured that out. But yeah, it does not require smoke, per se. Okay. There are a couple of sneaky additional ways to get some smoke as well, but that would not be. So one thing that I will say that might be a useful hint is that the smoke is not tied to necessarily a technique as a whole. Like, necrotic vial is always, quote, smoky, right? And every form of it is smoky. But that's not necessarily the case with everything. So there are a couple of places where specific forms of a technique, because of other things you're doing, are smoky. If that helps at all. And then there's another entirely independent way, which you could take that would make sort of a very broad set of techniques and make them able to harm the dragon. So there's, you can do it with smoky stuff. There's another entire way to sort of make a lot of stuff smoky, which is a little more puzzly, so it might take a bit more to break down. But yeah, it's by no means the only way to do that. Hopefully that helps. There's at least one more pretty useful one that you could get that's sort of buried but does count as smoky. Specific form, the technique. Another one that I'm not even going to tease you with because it's part of a technique that's been undiscovered for a long time. So I wouldn't worry about that one. And there's a little puzzle in that fight that if you were to crack it open, you could actually probably maul the dragon pretty badly with the right set of with a much broader set of techniques, way beyond with just like the handful that are tagged as smoky. Okay, so I've been talking for a long time and I should go out for a walk, but thank you all very much for listening, and thank you for playing, and for those of you who came back recently, welcome back. For those of you who are donating to the Patreon, I really appreciate that, and that has taken a lot of weight off my shoulders, which I'm a big fan of. And hopefully I will have some cool stuff out for you in the next couple of days. If not, assume that I've spent it all making sad coffee noises and petting my cat. But I will see you next time, and have a good one.